Good morning, good noon time, good midday, good noon 30, good afternoon, good evening, good night, good midnight, that whatever time of day it is. I want you to know, hey, I'm Lynn Ferguson, and I approve this message. I'm Lynn Ferguson, also known as Lynn Tennyson, your host here on the show, and I welcome you to another episode of Lynn's Bins. Today, we're just going to dive right into it, so you just sit back, relax, grab a snack, and let's jump in. Lynn's Bins. So you guys, I'm here today to talk about a very solemn topic, a very sad, disturbing issue, and honestly trend in the community. I'm focusing this on the Black community because, well, for many reasons, but mainly because this is a channel dedicated to Black life in America and all over the world and music. So I want to talk about DJ Academics and his accuser of sexual assault, his ex-girlfriend. So his alleged ex-girlfriend, Zaya Abashe, just accused him of rape. Not only him, but his friends. Allegedly, the same night, according to testimony given live by DJ Academics himself, the police came to or went to his home where this alleged assault took place, and they performed a rape kit on the woman. They showed up and made their presence known at the abode, if you can call it that. I mean, if that's the type of stuff, if it's taking place underneath that roof, then I don't think we can really call it a home. And she alleges that he sent for an Uber, and he even said that. He sent for an Uber to have her come over, but he's alleging that he fell asleep while she was having sex with, you know, consensual sex with his roommates and or his friends, whoever was there at the house. He claims it was two other dudes, and she claims that she was raped by these men, and that whether he was drunk or not, DJ Academics, he did end up participating in the alleged assault as well, allegedly. And it's just a despicable case. I'm having a hard time even getting this out because I too am a rape survivor. You know, I was raped several times throughout my life. Never, thank God, in a situation where like this, there were multiple men, but there's a video that came out from DJ Academics' home that shows him walking into his, well, first it shows the dog in the house, I guess it's DJ's dog, like alert to a commotion that's taking place in the house. And you hear this woman screaming. So he seems to be alert to this, alerted by this woman's screams and very interested in, you know, what exactly is going on. And he's walking down the hallway, and then you see just behind him, as he comes to a stop, the dog, DJ Academics comes in, the man dog, and, you know, he's like very coherent looking. He's walking very soberly, you know, to his destination, which ends up being off camera. But he comes into the room with the camera and then leaves from the side of the camera, but somewhere else in the room. And all of the while, I think it was a 30-second clip, you hear this woman screaming. It could have been 15 seconds, honestly. It could have been 5 seconds. It couldn't have been 5 seconds, but I'm just exaggerating because it was so detrimental to my psyche. It was so debilitating to hear this woman, this Black woman, screaming so horrendously, like for her life. She couldn't scream any worse than she was screaming in that video. Like, it was absolutely despicable. And the screams were so helpless and so gut-wrenching that it wasn't, and so emotional, it wasn't what he tried to later on explain it out, away as, you know, some girl coming to his house and, you know, vandalizing the property and just going crazy. This wasn't that kind of a scream. This was the kind of scream where a woman was in danger. Someone was in danger and they were literally being messed with by this perpetrator in whatever way. You know, obviously you can't tell from someone's screams what kind of perpetration is going on, but let me tell you, knowing that the allegations are rape of what's taking place in that video, it's not even a second thought that you can give. There's not even a second thought you can give to anything else to give credence to any other idea but that she was raped, that she was being raped in that moment. And it was absolutely disgusting. Like, I could not bear, but I pushed myself through to listen to as much as of the audio as was present in the video I was watching. But I am so, so upset. And I think this is a time we need to have another conversation about rape in the Black community in particular. Now, my story in particular, my stories, honestly. My mother claims that, you know, it all started when I was sexually assaulted, allegedly, by Dewan, my sperm donor, who I helped put in jail last year. Oh, well, it's 2024. I helped put in jail 2 years ago for the murder of my brother that happened over 20 years ago. He's my older brother, Christian Ferguson. We are Irish twins. He was like 361 days older than me. So we were born in the same month within the same few days of each other. And my mother says that before she got custody of the both of us, well, she didn't get custody of me until I was 12. But she says that before, that when custody was taken from her, I was claiming that I was sexually assaulted. I don't recall any of this. She doesn't have evidence of any of this whatsoever. But she says that I pointed on a doll, you know, just like Law and Order Special Victims Unit or something, and, you know, showed where I had been touched and whatnot. The only thing that I can say to attest to that is, or in response to that, or even that's relative to that, is that I fucked up my throat when I was a kid, sometime very immediately after this allegation was alleged to be made, by taking the broken leg off of my toy piano and shoving it down my throat, jagged edge first. So it was like this plastic, you know, what the little kids' toys are made out of. And it had gray legs, but it was like a red and blue piano. And it was like, you know, maybe 3 feet tall. And one of the legs was broken in a way that, you know, like if you were to take a chicken bone and break it in half, and you see all the edged little ridges and stuff, you could probably stab someone with that, you know, half of the chicken bone. That's what it was, that's what it looked like, the piano leg, before I shoved it down, jagged edge first, down my throat. I immediately coughed up blood into the toilet, and I remember Dewan, my sperm donor, yelling from behind me, you know, why the fuck would you do that? Why this, that, and the third? That's all I remember. Ever since then, I'm always reminded of it whenever I get sick, because the first thing that gets that alerts me to me getting sick is my throat starts hurting. And I guess I always associate it with that. But the next instance of sexual assault I dealt with is this guy who was the son, the older son of a friend of the family, I guess, this woman. This Black woman who my grandmother and step-grandfather knew, whose house they dropped me and John off at. John is my uncle, but he's 2 years younger than me, and I grew up with him and his sister as if we were brother and sisters, because he is 2 years younger than me and I am 4 months younger than my aunt. So we were all like, you know, three little kids in the same age range. John and I, for some reason, not Lorna, were dropped off at this person's house, and we never really saw the woman. She was just in the back room in her bedroom the whole time. And John and him were playing video games. I wasn't super interested. I have always been kind of a watcher when it comes to video games. And that's why I watch gameplay now. At one point, I went into the kitchen and I was looking for something to eat because, you know, my fat ass, I was always looking for something to eat when I was a kid. And I was a roly-poly. I think I was around 8, maybe 9 years old. And all of a sudden, from behind me, while I'm reaching inside of the cabinet for something to eat, maybe a canned good or something that I saw, maybe some Vienna sausages or something, this guy, the guy who was there, you know, whose mother's house it was, reaches from behind me and cups my boobs. Yes, I had boobs at that point. And it was just a really obviously weird situation. I didn't know how to react. I didn't know what was going on. And as he did this, he said, what did he say to me? Something about you've got titties, huh? Or something like that. It was just, it was a very unfortunate situation, but his mother came out of the room just as he was doing that. So thank God I was able to, you know, get out of that situation. But the very next time that I was sexually assaulted, and mind you, let me take a break to let you all know that I'm going through all of this to let you all know why the later cases of rape went the way they went. And I did not get justice because I was, and why a lot of women and men and people who are raped go through, why they do not report these things immediately. People don't seem to understand that the first time something happens to you, so traumatic, you really don't know what to do most of the time, most people. Most people are not just gonna automatically know A through Z what to do with the situation they've been handled, with the cards they've been dealt, and, you know, pursue justice for themselves or whatever. A lot of the time, that is because it is just a new situation. It's like how people always say that, oh, if somebody tried to shoot me, you know, I would duck and dodge and swoop and whoop and knock the gun out of their hands, and I would this, that, and the third, or I wouldn't be scared, or this, that, and the third. But when it happens, or a better situation is in a shootout, you know, when you are in the middle of a shootout and it's not aimed at you, but you're in the middle of it. You know, most people think that they know how they would react in a situation like that, or a terroristic situation of some other kind. But you don't really know until you're in the moment. And then most people freeze. Unfortunately, most people freeze up. You know, that is exactly what happens. They don't do what they're supposed to do in that situation because you don't know what to do because this is new to you. And it's, you never know something until you know it, until you experience it. So the third situation that I can recall of me facing sexual assault was actually my uncle. I was around the same age, and he ended up jumping on top of me in my bed one night when we had a babysitter over. She was downstairs watching South of Nowhere or some shit, some lesbian show. Love it though. I love that show. And he just got on top of me and started grinding and humping, dry humping me and all this other stuff. And, you know, saying, I know you like it and this, that, and the third. And it was just very, very disturbing because it was just like, you know, what do you do in this situation? The next situation after that was years and years later when I was, I believe, 14 or 15 years old. It's like 15 or 16, maybe. And I think I was 15. Maybe 14. And this guy I knew who was, I think, in my same grade and same age range, he was definitely only 1 or 2 years older or younger than me. I believe he was like maybe a year older than me. This guy named Mark. Everyone kind of like was already like kind of at, you know, standoffish with him because, you know, he had this quirky personality. He was a very weird guy. He would run around claiming to be a vampire and trying to suck people's blood and, you know, just crazy, you know. But because I was always an odd one out when I was a kid, you know, I kind of was attracted to people, and not physically attracted, just like, you know, pulled to people who, although I was physically attracted to this guy, pulled to people who were weirder because, you know, I was considered weird just because of who I am. and, you know, being a Black transgender woman. And so I would give people the benefit of the doubt that I did not receive from people, because I knew that people would judge me just because of my appearance and my label. And I felt that that was what was happening to other people. It actually got me in trouble with a few different exes. Long story short, this guy, I don't know if I met him or, no, his mother picked me up from somewhere. And it was his mother in the passenger seat. I don't remember who was in the driver's seat. And then me and him were in the back seat. And we went to a motel to apparently have a good time. And they dropped us off at this motel. I don't know if they were living at this motel or if they were just staying there for like a minute or what the situation, or if they got the motel specifically for, you know, him to have sex for the first time. I don't know. I don't know if they were planning this out with him or what, but, you know, me and him did plan to, you know, engage. We went in to go have sex, you know, something that I was on board with doing. And he was more girthy than I thought. He had more, you know, of a phallus than I thought he did, if you're with me. So it was one of my first times. I think it was the third time that I knew of that I had, you know, full on sex. So, and it was the first time with someone who was a peer. And I'll go back to those other two experiences where it wasn't with a peer, because I forgot to mention those as well, but those did precede this. But, and those would technically be considered rape as well. But this guy, we'll stick with this one, this Mark guy, he ended up going too far. He was too big, it was too much. I knew something was wrong. I felt immense pain. And I kept trying to get him to stop and to get off of me. And he fucked me off the bed. Like it was ridiculous. And he did not stop until he was done. And I got up and I went to the bathroom immediately when he was done. And I was bleeding in the toilet from, you know, that orifice. And it was, you know, pretty surreal, honestly. And he was like, "Hey, are you okay?" And I was like, "I'm bleeding." And he was like, "Oh my gosh, why didn't you tell me? Oh my gosh, you should have said something." And I said, "I did." And he didn't say anything. So that was that situation. I made no fuss about it. I didn't accuse him of rape. I didn't know that that would have even qualified as rape back then, because I was a teenager, a young kid, and I did not really know what I was doing when it came to sex, you know? Now let me get to these two rape situations that happened before him so that you can get a better picture of the whole synopsis of this whole story, or the whole story. The first time I ever had full-on sex that I can think of was, and when I say I can think of, that's just me acknowledging that, you know, I apparently alleged to my mother that I was sexually assaulted when I was a kid, and I don't know what happened in that situation. So I could have very well been penetrated in that situation when I accused allegedly my sperm donor of this, that, and the third. So I was living in my first foster parent's house. I had just come into the foster care system after like a month or so of being in a home, a kid's home. And it was called Annie Malone in St. Louis. So I moved to in with my foster parents at the time, who ended up being my foster parents for about 7 months. And I went to, okay, so this is crazy. I'm thinking of all these things. I'm forgetting all of these different horrendous situations that I've had sexually. But actually, I have to start with this other guy who was three grades over me. He was a senior when I was a freshman, or he was a junior. And this guy, what was his name? Ben, he invited me over to, well, he found me on Facebook. He liked some of my pictures where I was showing my body a little bit, you know, showing my belly, showing my legs. And he liked what he saw. And he knew that I was a transgender woman because I went to the same school as him. And I was the talk of the school because I was like, you know, the only transgender woman there. So, or girl. So I guess I piqued his interest. He let me know through Facebook. He liked some of my pictures. He sent me a few messages, invited me to come over after school. And I went down, walked down the street to his house after school. It was right down the street on the same street as the school, about two blocks up. So I went over to his house and he was completely naked and he wanted me to get naked before I got in the bed. I was about to get in the bed, but then he wanted me to strip. And I wasn't super comfortable with my body yet, so whatever. But I stripped and what do you call it? He was like, he had this hideous look on his face. Like, ill. Apparently I was ashy in certain places and this, that, and the third. And he just didn't approve. So he settled on basically just having me give him head. And I was about to do it. And then somebody came in, or somebody was coming up the steps to come up into the house. I do believe I did, you know, do it for a second. And then he was going to allow me to continue to do that while these people came in. And I was like, So I pulled away because I'm like hearing these people come up the steps. And he's like, you can go out the back or whatever the case is. You know, weird ass situation. So I left out the back and I was very, very perturbed at the moment. I was upset. I was confused. I didn't really know what to think. And I was defeated. I was embarrassed. All that good stuff. The next day, rumors were spreading all over the school and all over Hartford Coffee Company, which was this coffee shop that I would frequent with a lot of juniors and seniors who were, you know, in this clique that I ended up being a part of for years. Only a few people who were younger, like my age, freshmen and sophomores, were allowed in that clique because, you know, it was, like I said, it was juniors and seniors. And it was usually only the ones who were more mature, and then that and the third. And of course, that was me. So I was like one of the very few people who was of my age range who was, you know, invited into the different, you know, shindigs and gatherings and get-togethers and stuff that that group would have. I call them the gang. So all throughout the coffee shop and somewhat throughout the school are rumors of me being, you know, ashy, me being ugly, me being stinky, all these things. And descriptions of the proportions of my body and how they didn't match and this, that, and it was just a really messed up situation. And, you know, of course this was me at 14, you know, no hormones, no anything, still had boobs, still had a feminine shape to some degree, but I was still, I didn't look anywhere near as good as I look now. And so I was very self-conscious. That made me even more self-conscious. And I confronted him and I was like, so why are you running around here telling people this, that, and the third? And he was like, it's true. I was like, you're horrible. And some of my friends got mad at him too because they thought that it was just a distasteful situation. People came outside of the coffee shop and teased me, like this dude Chico teased me for, you know, being built the way that I'm built and all this other shit and being stinky. And that really did a number on me. So very soon afterward, I got on Craigslist. I don't know what led me to, you know, discover this. I don't know how I discovered it, but somehow I discovered the posts that people had of themselves looking for a transgender girl or woman to, you know, be with for the night. And I answered two of those posts and they came back to back one after another. I answered one post and then I answered another post after the first one was a real quick situation. So I answered the first post, the guy came over, he was this like 30 something year old guy, looked like he was almost 40, white and bald. And, or balding. And, yeah, I think he was completely bald. And he came over, he ended up, you know, fucking me, which you can consider it to be rape because of statutory rape because I was a child. And it was like a 2-minute situation. I guess he was just like, you know, overwhelmed with the moment and the opportunity of being able to fuck a kid who, you know, was pretending not to be and who he clearly knew was a kid. And then, because I've always looked more mature for my age, but like, you know when you're dealing with a kid. That was like 2 minutes, like I said, and I was just like, what, is it over? So I called somebody else, or I answered somebody else's ad, and this guy came over. He was definitely a bigger guy in that department, and he was much taller. He was this tall, white, executive-looking dude who looked like he might work at either a car sales, as car salesman, or maybe in an office somewhere. He came in, he fucked me, raped me, whatever you want to say, at least 30 minutes. So it was definitely a situation where I was more getting, it was more of a, you know, common sexual encounter for an adult, you know, with that time frame. And I could barely make it through because, like I said, he wasn't as small as the other dude was, and he didn't wait as long or take as long as the other dude. So it was definitely a painful situation, a weird situation. And when he got done, he was like, clean yourself up, and he left. And yeah. It's safe to say that, unfortunately, my negative experience with this guy, Ben, who was at my school, who, you know, treated me so horribly in our sexual encounter, and then spread all these rumors about me afterward. Safe to say that due to that, I felt the need to prove myself and also to just lose myself in, you know, this realm of sex. So it pushed me further into that world. And unfortunately, that's what happened. I ended up letting two grown white men rape me. And so we fast forward to when I was technically an adult in St. Louis, back in when I was 17, I believe. 17 was the age of consent. So I was technically an adult. I was in my first apartment in Parkville, which is in Shrewsbury, right behind the old Chop and Save and the Deals. So I think there's a Value City over there too. So what do you call it? It's nowhere from the Shrewsbury station. You can go to the left, you can go one way and get to the Shrewsbury station, or you can go another way and get to Watson / Chippewa, and you can go down Watson until it turns into Chippewa. And about two blocks up from where my house is was my dealer's house, my connect, you know, for weed. And one day I had just gotten back from hanging out with my aunt, the one who I grew up with, who's 4 months older than me, and her friends. And it was mostly this guy, Ian, and this guy, Damien. And Damien was very flamboyant, gay, whatever. Ian was, in my opinion, he was clearly gay, but, you know, he was like with my aunt's friend, female friend, and, you know, this, that, and the third. And they were allegedly just friends, Ian and this Derek character. But they lived together in this house with this guy who was like, you know, suntan, Ken doll looking, you know, but like he wasn't super attractive, but he still looked like a Ken doll. You know, the suntan, the bleach blonde hair, the Hawaiian shirts, like everything. And long story short, we ended up tripping acid that day. I do believe it was the first time that I ever did that. And it was a definitely new experience. And I was coming down from that when I was dropped off at my house the next day, the next morning. And I needed some weed because I had gathered in those few years of smoking weed that, you know, I had an addictive personality. So I needed to, if I ever tried anything new, I was okay as long as I weaned myself back onto the green, you know? So if I tried something like acid or shrooms or something, I would be okay as long as I had green afterward for when I came back down. So I hit up my connect, this dude named PJ, and I was like, hey, you know, are you good? This guy I had been talking to for the entire year that I had been in that apartment. you know? So he had never once given me anything other than green. I had never gotten anything from him other than green. But he asked me if he could come over and smoke me out. And then, you know, he could sell it to me as well. And I was like, oh yeah, sure. Cause you know, I had just gotten done hanging out with a whole bunch of people. I was at my apartment by myself. Didn't really want to be, so whatever. And I thought he was cute, you know? So like, I always thought the dude was cute, you know, but like he never seemed to, I didn't want to make that move. And you know, he's the dude. So, you know, I just waited and didn't say anything about it. Until this day when he came over and, I guess I was tripping so bad still coming down from the trip that when he texted me, I thought he texted me something about bringing weed, but he actually texted me and said that all he had, let me know that all he had was E as in ecstasy. And so long story short, he comes over, we figure out the confusion. I'm kind of more than kind of disappointed. And I say, okay, well, I might as well try it. And you know, after a little bit of convincing of him, from him, and we sit down and what do you call it? We're watching TV for a second, listening to music. And then the shit starts hitting. So I get up to start trying to do the Dance For You dance by Beyonce that I had taught myself at that point in time. And I started to realize within the first five moves that I was not myself. I started slowing down. My body was moving so slowly. And it was like, I could not do anything to make it move quicker. You know, it was like, if I wanted to walk to the bathroom, it would have taken 50 years, that kind of shit. You know, if I wanted to move my hand from the right side of my body, my right hand to the left side of my body, it would have taken like 5-10 seconds. That's how slowly I was moving, almost like a tracer of myself. So it was really unfortunate because I had no experience with date rape or anything like that. And if I had, I would have understood quite plainly this was a date rape drug and that I was under the effects at that point. But I did not know. And I was like sweating my ass off, trying to do these dances, trying to work through it. And mind you, you know, I have, you know, training and choreography and choreographed dancing and this, that, and the third, a little bit of ballet, this, that, and the third. So me not being able to dance was a pretty big thing at that point because it was just like, you know, it clearly showed that I was under the influence of something I was unaware of because, you know, it just was what it was. So anyway, you know, he was alleging that it was supposed to make you horny. You know, E is supposed to make you horny and it's supposed to make you want to dance, which it is, but it did not make me do that. It made me debilitated. It debilitated me and made me almost conscious and unconscious at the same time. And I apologize for how badly I did the dance because, you know, at the end of the day, I knew I did that poorly because, you know, this shit was affecting me weirdly. And I don't recall how we got to the room. I just recall that we ended up in my bedroom and he was in the spooning position, spooning me and fucking me, raping me. And I kept pushing him off of me or trying to, but the way that I was doing it because of the drug, I was putting my hand behind my back and pushing on his belly, but I could not do anything. You know what I'm saying? I had no force in it. My hand was moving so lightly and so slowly. It was impossible. It was impossible for me to do anything for myself at that point. Maybe even take a drink of water. And I was basically a limp fish, you know? I think the episode that I talked about this in is called Limp Fish on this through this same channel, Lensbens. And, you know, he even had the nerve to tell me to move and how he wanted me to grind on him while he was raping me. It was a very, very unfortunate situation. And I did it, you know, because at this point, you know, I'm just like dazed, confused, lost and amazed. I don't know what's going on. And, you know, I've always been a people pleaser. So like, you know, it was just a weird situation. It's just so many different things go through your head. But nevertheless, I did say, no, stop, get off of me. And I was pushing him, this, that, and the third, but there was nothing I could do. So what do you call it? Even when he told me to grind and I, you know, obliged, I didn't really oblige because I couldn't fucking do it because I couldn't do anything. And it was just disgusting. And it took me years to figure out what happened to me and to understand, because I always had the memory of it, but well, I won't say I always had the memory of it. I think it came back to me some years later, but I always had the memory of it. I just didn't really think well enough on it to come to the conclusion that I was raped. But I was, you know, I never consented to have sex with him. He gave me something that was not what he said it was. It was a date rape drug on top of that. So it's not like he gave me fucking Molly when he was supposed to give me E. No, he gave me a date rape drug that was supposed to leave me incapacitated. So it's just really messed up. And it took me years to come to the conclusion that I did not have consensual sex with this guy, that this was rape, you know? And this was him drugging me and taking advantage of me. Since then, I have not been sexually assaulted. I've been used and abused, but I have not been sexually assaulted. I've met guys who I ended up hating, who I let have it, but I haven't been sexually assaulted outside of those situations that I'm aware of. And it's just really unfortunate. And I explain all of that so that you all can know, you know, one, so that people can hear this story and know that what they went through is rape if they went through similar situations, but also so that we can have a conversation about this constant narrative of why do people not want to not come forward when the shit happens. This is why. We live in a society where the culture is rape. There is a rape culture in the society. You will not believe, you probably will, because you probably grew up with it too, how many horrendous movies I've seen about rape growing up. It has literally been in so many movies, so many TV shows, so much, you know what I'm saying? There's a rape culture in America, you know? You've got people out here who, you know, believe that you can't be raped if you are wearing a certain outfit, believe that you can't be raped if you consented to do some drugs with somebody, believe that you can't be raped if this, that, and the third. And they say things like, why didn't you come out when it happened? And it's like, I know there are things that have happened to a lot of people out here that they did not come out about because they were either embarrassed or they didn't know what the fuck their options were or how to even process what happened to them. And I need people to give credence to the victims in these situations who come forward, because no, not every alleged victim is a victim of that situation. Some people are lying, but we need to stop blaming women and people for their assaults and them not handling things the way that, you know, they're technically supposed to, because these are people who live lives, who have their own experiences and their own upbringings that may or may not deter them from doing things the right way. You know, when you grow up like me in a family that does not, you know, talk about sexual assault, don't even want to hear about it. You know, my aunt was sexually assaulted by her uncle, my great uncle, who just passed away. And she has had to keep quiet about that all of her life. She told people, she even, you know, told her mother, all this other stuff, but like, she has still had to keep quiet about it. Her mother has still gone out and hung out with this, you know, and been family and acquainted with this guy because it's her brother, you know? And it's just really messed up. We don't talk about these things in the community. And then we wonder why boys and girls do not go and report, or men and women do not go and report when these things happen. How many of you all had conversations with your parents about, you know, rape and sexual assault, and they went into great detail about what that looks like and what it can look like, and you were fully prepared to deal with any situation if you were ever raped? Not many. I'm sure there are some, but not many. Not the majority, definitely not. Because they don't even talk about sexual assault in the family, in Black families. And if you do talk about it, you're ostracized from the family, or if they do talk about it, they're trying to blame the victim. because it's easier to blame the victim than to blame the perpetrator. And that is the culture we've grown up around and within. And we need to stop. I just saw a post that Boosie Badass made addressing T.S. Madison and how she was, I love T.S. Madison, and how she was on his case ever since some situation way back when or something. And it's his prerogative if he wanted to take his daughters out of the theater when Suge and Seeley were kissing in the new Color Purple film that came out recently, musical. And T.S. Madison rightfully pointed out, yes, I'm on your case. And I've been on your case since you admitted to getting your 6-year-old sexually assaulted, having him sexually assaulted by a full-grown woman stripper because you didn't want him to turn out gay. And you went on live talking all about that. And I can say similar things about my family. My uncle, you know, he reminds me a lot of Boosie. He had that same mentality, you know? I don't know of him ever getting a young underage boy in the family to have sex with a prostitute, but he's definitely made comments in that vein, threatening to do things like that with people like me who grew up in the family who were not acting the way that we were expected to act when it comes to gender norms and stereotypes and behaviors. And, you know, he was the type of man, punch you in your chest and, you know what I'm saying? You know, toughen up, you know, blah. And, you know, all that crazy shit. And it's a part of the reason that he has a frayed relationship with his daughter right now, because he raised her with that same kind of notion and that same kind of discipline. Just really messed up that we have this culture in our community, you know. But Boosie went in, and then T.S. Madison responded, and she said, you know, not only did you have your 6-year-old raped by this grown prostitute, but, and you bragged about it online, but you are a part of what has made this culture the way it is. You and all of the things that you put out in your music, talking about two red bones kissing and all this other stuff, but you can't sit in the theater with your daughters when they're, and your sons, when you're watching The Color Purple, because there was a kiss between two women. But you were able, and she pointed out, that you were able to sit through the sexual assault of a father raping his daughter and impregnating her. You were able to sit through the many sexual assaults and physical assaults that Seeley faced at the hands of Harpo, who was also overage and she was underage. All of these things, when she was wedded to him, you know, all of these things. You were able to sit through all of the abuses, all of the violence, all of the sexual trauma that these characters endured, but you weren't able to sit through a kiss between two women. It's a very good point. And like I said, you know, she has pointed out, T.S. Madison, how this man, Boosie, has put all of his fears of the gay agenda and the gay community and the LGBTQIA community, you know, on his son by reinforcing these horrendously flawed and skewed masculine stereotypes on his 6-year-old son at the time, by putting a prostitute in the room with him and making him have sex with her. Or at least get head from her, according to his own testimony. So, you know, it's just disgusting and despicable. Again, I wanted to bring this to you guys because this is something we need to work on as a community, because this is not okay. We wonder why there are so many horrible things happening to women. We wonder why DJ Academics is allegedly able to, with his friends, allegedly do what they did to this girl. His ex-girlfriend, at that. We wonder why, but then you turn around and you see that we're still keeping the pedophiles at the in the family and at the family reunions. We're still not talking about sexual assault. We're still blaming the victims in the family for coming out about being sexually assaulted by other family members. This has got to stop. It's got to stop, you know? And I hope that you all come to realize sooner rather than later that God is watching. God is listening. God is experiencing everything that you do and don't do with, for your kids, your family, yourself. And where you fail, God will be there to let you know. So you all need to think long and hard about what you're going to do about these types of atrocities in your own family, because we cannot continue to go through this type of shit. We cannot continue to accept living in a world where children are unaware of the dangers out here that are posed. Some of the most raped individuals in this country are children. Little girls and little boys. Yet we are trying to ban sex ed from schools. We're trying to ban rape education from children. Knowing that these parents are not going to teach their kids anything. And if they do, they're going to be misguiding them a lot of the time, because a lot of Black people have, just like a lot of white people and other people, have misconceived notions about what is sexual assault and what it isn't. But I'm Lynn Ferguson, also known as Lynn Tennyson, your host here on the show. And I welcome you next time we jump in. Lynn's Bins. So I just wanted to add this last bit about this final sexual assault that I experienced. This is an attempted rape that I did not mention in the lineup of events similar that I've experienced throughout my life. So this situation took place more than a couple years ago, back in the beginning of COVID. I believe it was 2020, because it was at least a year after broken up with by my ex, my most recent ex, even to this day, because I haven't been in a relationship since 2019. So this was with this guy named Zachary. He do believe came out with a Facebook post about it right before I went to the police about the situation. And the Facebook post was just an eye-opening experience, because it allowed me to see a lot of people, connect with a lot of people women who had been through similar situations. Most of whom were women I went to school with. So one of them was a sophomore when I was a freshman in high school at Central Visual and Performing Arts High School. You know, the one with the unfortunate shooting recently that killed Ms. Kuchka and a student, I believe, named Alex. I did an article about it. Unfortunately, Ms. Kuchka is a teacher who was teaching when I was going to school there over a decade ago. But she was not one of my teachers. Though I vividly remember her. I starkly remember her presence in the school and the way that it was appreciated greatly by the students. But anyway, so Zachary and I had been talking for a few weeks to a few months through Facebook messages before we ended up meeting up. He was very sexual in the messages, even sending me a lot of porn from that was themed after different themes. So there was Scooby-Doo. We were both anime fans, but you know, when you're an anime fan, I guess oftentimes that kind of is just one thing that you do or that you're into, and can be a prelude to all the other things that you're into and stuff. So just cartoon stuff in general as an adult from when you were a kid, and things like that, just nostalgic shit. So if he would ever send me porn, it was themed in some kind of anime or cosplay kind of way. And what do you call it? So I wasn't surprised that he was going to be, you know, trying to be physical when we finally met in person, when I thought about it beforehand, which is why I went out of my way to message him. And I still have these messages and let him know through Facebook, you know, hey, I do not have sex with people the first day that I meet them. So that's just not going to happen tonight when we meet each other. The day that we ended up meeting each other in the end of 2020, I believe it was. And so I go, so he comes over, he picks me up from my family manor in Ferguson, where I was staying at the time. And we go back to his house, which was like Hazelwood Apartments or something like that. And it was right over there in that area, definitely in the same area, close to where I was in Ferguson. But he wasn't technically in Ferguson. I think he was in Hazelwood. And that's where I ended up making the police report. So he had ordered some Chinese food, I believe, before I got there. So it either arrived immediately after I got there or right before I got there. We eat Chinese food in the kitchen. His mom comes downstairs. She's hearing a Japanese song that I'm playing for him, I think through my phone. And she's like, oh, you sing in Japanese? And she was like, you know, what does it mean? And I start telling her what the song means or whatever. So I was singing Fukai Mori by Duo's Infinity from Inuyasha. Excuse me. And she went back upstairs. Within like 10 minutes, we were done eating and going upstairs. And as you get to the top of the steps, immediately to your left, you see his mother's door to her bedroom, where she was sitting in her bed, you know, wide awake, looking at something in her hands, maybe a book or something, while the TV was on. And right next to her room, not even a, you know, foot away from the door frame, is the door frame to his room and the door to his room. And it was on the same left side of the, you know, corridor at the top of the steps. So we get up to the second floor and we go inside of his room. And we were in there for like not even 30 minutes listening to music that I was showing him through the, you'll notice a theme. If you ever date me, you know, one of the first things I get to is I'm a singer. This is my music. So, you know, because that's what I do a lot. Like, that's the thing I do the most. So I want people to know that about me so that they can, we can find out real quick if this is going to work. Because if you can't deal with my music, you're not going to be able to deal with me. But I'm showing him my music through his Xbox, I believe. And I took a picture of him with his permission for, I think it was for some aging thing on my phone where it would age you. And we were in there, like I said, no more than 30 minutes talking a little bit. And then next thing I know, he's like trying to throw me on the bed, grabbing me violently and like violently trying to kiss me, pressing what felt like the bones of his face up against my lips. And, you know, it was the worst thing in the world. I mean, he barely had any lips. And then he's like, you know, forcing this. So it's like, it's clearly not going to work. You don't force a kiss, it don't work. We have skulls, people. We have teeth, most of us. And like, you know, it just doesn't work when you're trying to force that shit to happen, especially when you don't have lips. So, you know, he's over here trying to force a kiss down my throat simultaneously as he's like violently like reaching up my dress and grabbing me and, you know, all these different places and shit. He grabbed my tits at one point. He throws me to the bed, which took a minute. The only reason it happened is because I lost my balance because he just had a lot more force than I thought he was. You know, I thought he did. Like, he was, for him to be such a skinny guy, like, it was just crazy to think about the fact that, you know, this was, you know, a guy who was substantially skinnier than me. I'm not skinny. I was not skinny at that point. And, you know, I'm not fat either, but like, you know, at that point I was a very good size and I had no, virtually no fat on me aside from like in the right places. You know what I mean? So I was a little thick, but I wasn't fat. There was no belly pudge or anything like that. So anyway, but still, I just thought that I had more power than he did. But, you know, I guess because I underestimated him greatly in that category and was just like caught off guard by the whole situation. Like, he's done all these things I've explained already in less than like 3 seconds. So it's crazy. Like, but then I end up on the bed and him on top of me, and he's still trying to press, you know, his lips on my lips. Like, he's trying to force kiss. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, leave me alone. At one point I did say, get off of me. No. But it was very like, you know, subtle or whatever, because it was just like, by subtle, I mean in volume. It was definitely obviously a loud enough volume for him to hear it, especially him being right there, not even space away from my mouth. But, you know, it wasn't like I was screaming or anything, because, you know, at this point, we're 4 or 5 seconds into this, and I'm just, like, still trying to actually comprehend the situation. It was very crazy. You know, someone doesn't just jump on you and you automatically just start, no! Like Diana Ross and The Wiz. It's too early for me to be seen. Even trying to do her scream, which I can't even do normally usually. But what do you call it? Those who know, you know. And if you don't know, look up The Wiz. I love The Wiz. It is my absolute favorite and, in my opinion, the best Wizard of Oz movie there is in existence. Aside from the well-known, what people call the original, even though it's not technically the original, there were many before it. The one with Judy Garland, I believe, is her name. But, and in my opinion, it's better than that one. But that's my personal opinion. Knowing how well-known the Judy Garland one is, and how critically acclaimed it is, and how well-liked it is, I can't necessarily say, outside of my opinion, I'm not going to at least, that it is better than The Wiz, even though I do wholeheartedly believe that. But when it comes to actually just like saying what the facts are, the facts do seem to support that The Wizard of Oz is the best one ever, in most people's opinion. But also, most people have not seen The Wiz or even given it time of day because of so many different reasons, but mainly racism and anti-blackness, even if they don't know it, is the reason that they don't want to watch it or don't like it or give it a chance. But anyway, I did, you know, let him know this was not acceptable. I was clearly not agreeable with what he was trying to do. And I couldn't even get him off of me for like a few seconds. I was on my back on the bed, and I was just like, he was, you know, still feeling my, you know, aggressively feeling my chest and all kinds of shit. It was just crazy. I was just like, what the fuck is going on? What is going on? So he finally gets off of me because I was struggling so much. Like, I was not going to stop struggling. It was about to get crazy in a minute. You know, once I got my wits about me and got out of, I guess, the shock of the situation. And then, you know, he sat on, sat next to me on the bed, and I was like sitting a little ways away from him. And I was like halfway between getting up, you know, sitting back up straight and like being in the position he had me in. So like, I was like kind of stuck there for a second, and he was, you know, it was just a weird, weird, weird situation. He ended up dropping me off at my house that same day. And I guess I was just in such shock that, you know, I didn't really react the way that, you know, you would think someone would react in a situation like that. I wasn't super mad and all this other stuff. Like, I was just like, I don't know. I guess I've just numbed myself to that kind of stuff throughout, because it's happened so much throughout my life that when things like that happen, it's almost like if somebody steps on your shoe, you know what I mean? It's really fucked up to even say that, but like, it's crazy. Like, it's just like, even I go back and I look at situations and I'm like, gosh, like, you know, why didn't I scream and all this other stuff? But it's like, if I would, I mean, what happened in that room was loud enough that his mother could have heard it and should have heard it. His door was wide open. Her door was wide open. It was crazy. So it was just a weird situation because it was just like, part of me was just like, well, if he's bold enough to do this right now with her and all of this shit that I just explained, these doors wide open and this, that, and her right next door, then she might be in on this type of shit. Who knows? You know what I'm saying? I need to, you know, I don't know if screaming is going to be my best option. They might come in here and fucking knock me out. You know what I'm saying? Because they'd be, you know, because they're like, oh no, she's gonna call the neighbors over here or something like that. We're not letting this one go, you know. Dale, get the chloroform from underneath the sink, like, and the moonshine from out back. Like, seriously, like, I don't know. It's just like, there may be a method to the madness of it all, but it is just as crazy to think about my reactions to these situations as I'm sure other people hearing this, you know, are thinking about them or whatever. And, you know, that comes from a life of trauma. That's the only thing I can say. So, but this is part of why I'm telling these types of stories, because, you know, not only in the society is there a culture of this type of shit, but in my history, there's a culture of this type of stuff happening to me. So, and it being normal, so it was basically normalized. And that is something I need people to understand. It's not relegated to me only, you know? It's not just something that happens to me alone. It's the case for a lot of different people's situations. So, you know, that's definitely a reason why a lot of people are not coming forth about this type of stuff, because we're not condemning this type of stuff as much as we should be, in the way that we should be. And then whenever it comes up as a conversation, the main focus is the victim and why the victim did this, that, and the third, instead of why perpetrators do what they do. If we focus more on why perpetrators do what they do, you know, the criminology of it all, instead of criminalizing the victim, then, what do you call it? And in some cases, lawyer, then, but if we look at this in overall as victim versus perpetrator, and we look at the victim, the potential victim versus the suspect, or potential perpetrator, if we look at the potential perpetrator versus, or suspect versus the potential victim, then if we focus on that more, we are able to, one, create a culture that has more shame for perpetrators than for victims and potentials of the same. And two, we would have more study on what we need to study, the actual people who might be doing these things and the people who are doing these things, because you're going to automatically catch people who are doing these things if you're more focused on the potential perpetrators than on the potential victims. Because what are you going to get from the victim? Either the truth about a perpetration that they can't explain to you because they're not the one who did it, or the, you know, just the victim's truth, or you're going to get the potential victim's lies and the fact that they are not a victim, and you're just going to find out that they were lying about the situation and nothing happened. But if you look at the potential perpetrator, you're automatically going to get any perpetrator who you can get, and then you're going to get, you know, people caught up in it who are suspects. But that's what happens in crime anyway. You cannot avoid people being suspected of a crime that they did not commit, because that's how you deduce and, you know, determine, you know, that's how detectives work. That's how police investigations work. You know, you have to have, everyone's a suspect. If you, I mean, if you go to any 101 training, they teach you, I'm sure, that every and anyone can be a suspect. So, you know, we need to get that out of our heads at the end of the day. We need to stop feeling so much sorrow for, you know, potential perpetrators who still have the law in their favor, most cases, because they are innocent until proven guilty. It's not until you get a guilty conviction on your record that you are guilty until proven innocent in that regard. But yeah, so I ended up going to the police and reporting the situation. And I include this also so people can know that I went to go get justice in the situation. I was within the time frame of getting justice. It was sometime in late 2022, just before the 2-year limitation hit. And the police did not want to investigate it or pass it on to the DA. The prosecutor's office. And they were supposed to. So I had to call them back and I had to call some people I know in the prosecuting office in order to, you know, get them to move, get the ball moving on this and light a fire under their butts and make them do their jobs that they did not initially want to do. Now, eventually they decided that they weren't going to bring forth any kind of claim or charges or go any further with it. But I picked him out in a lineup. I gave them his information. Like I said, I made a post. I don't think I explained this well enough, but I made a post on Facebook and found out about a lot of people. Women's stories were similar to mine. And they had either been just harassed by him or they had been assaulted by him as well. And one of them faced so much from him that over the years that she moved to Hawaii to get away from him, allegedly, according to her own testimony. And the police would not allow her to file a police report because she was in Hawaii. So she had to come back to St. Louis, and that was not gonna happen. And the other girl who was sexually harassed by him with porn that she did not want to receive from him and was receiving advances from him and cyber stalking, basically, that was the limit to what she experienced. It was never anything physical, and she didn't want to come forward and go to the police about it. So the only person who actually was able to make a police report and did was me, and that's what made it easier for them to dismiss the whole situation. But I just wanted to bring this here so you all can know this is why these types of things happen. This is why people don't go to the police about these types of things. You know, one of the main reasons is because you are sexually assaulted. Who has proof or attempted? You were attempted raped, or someone attempted to rape you, or whatever the case is. If that's the case, like in this situation I described, oftentimes you don't have proof because you have not actually been raped. So you're expected to have some kind of recording, to have some kind of witness, to have something that actually proves that this person tried to rape you. And in this case, he didn't physically, like, assault me in a violent, you know, way that left bruises on me, like hitting me, you know, a regular physical assault that's detached from sexual abuse. So outside of sexual abuse, he didn't physically assault me. He did physically assault me sexually, but it was not in a way that can really be proven. How can that be proven without his admission? You know, what is his mom gonna come for and attest to the commotion that I know she heard? No. For who, some black tranny? Girl, please. So, you know, cautionary tales for people. and also informational podcast episode for those who wonder why how these things happen to victims and why they're in certain situations, and also why they react certain ways to this kind of abuse and don't come forth, and how the procedure goes, how the process goes. But I thank you again for joining me. I'm Lynn Ferguson, your host, also known as Lynn Tennyson. And I welcome you next time. Jump in, Lynn's Bins. So I'm just adding this last part to this episode, this already so long episode that already had extensions, because I'm a work in progress, and unfortunately, that does also, and fortunately, it also includes healing, the healing department or category for me personally. I'm a work in progress in that realm as well. So that means that I'm still healing from everything that has happened to me. And I unfortunately have had initially tried to do so by blocking a lot of these things out of my memory, as most of us do when traumatic things happen. So there is at least one more situation that I did have to mention. I think there are two, but the one that that's in the forefront of my mind at the moment is this guy who I was working with through this office building on Locust, which houses a whole bunch of different businesses. The one in particular, I forget what the name of the business is or was, but it was basically this company where for which you would work by going to different people's houses and trying to get them to, I think it was some kind of insurance agency situation or whatever. You go to different people's houses and try to sell them on this insurance product package or what have you. And this black guy, middle-aged, like in his late 30s, early 40s to mid 40s, maybe even to late 40s, was the guy who was supposed to take me out to the different prospects' houses and things like that so that we could, you know, sell them on the products and stuff. And every time I would ride in the car, the whole ride over to Illinois from Missouri, you know, consistently consist of him trying to throw himself on me. So he'd be holding his dick, he'd be trying to show me how it looked and how big it was in his pants and stuff like that, you know, just all kinds of shit, asking me to have sex with him. And this is when I was younger, so I didn't really understand a lot. I think it was like so when I first started working the job, I was like maybe 18 or 19. It was somewhere in that range. And he just kept throwing himself on me. It was a really weird situation because it was just like, I'm here trying to get a job and trying to work, and I'm trying to, you know, make money for myself because I'm broke as a joke at this moment and I have nothing going on at this point, like literally no money to fall back on. So like I don't have time to go to a new job and try to get that job and then wait until they schedule me and start working. You know what I'm saying? So it was a lot of that shit going on that made me tolerate the job that I was working at that point with this guy. Whereas today I would never do that. You know what I'm saying? I would just, you know, have to deal with the fact that I just couldn't work this job because, you know, I'm not going to put myself through that kind of stress. But, you know, back then I didn't really understand that. I, you know, knew that I needed to make way for myself no matter what. So I figured I could just ignore it. Then I also did find him attractive. I just didn't like the way that he was approaching me. So like, it's not like I was at that point, like would have been super opposed. Now, obviously today I would be super opposed to getting with someone like that because of obvious reasons. You don't want to be with nobody like that. But back then I was more up for, you know, sexual encounters that didn't have any attachments. And, you know, as long as he would treat me with better respect, I wasn't super opposed to the whole situation, but the way he was coming on to me, I was opposed. Also, I'm not gonna fuck you while we're supposed to be on the clock. Like, what the fuck is going on? I remember when I went in and I was like interviewing for the job, he was like, the very first time I went in to interview for the job, he inside of the building on Locust, he pulled his dick out from behind the desk and, you know, was saying all kinds of suggestive things and this, that, and the third. And it was just crazy. And I could have very easily had a lawsuit. But I didn't understand law
I didn't understand what my rights were back then. You know, being a transgender woman, you know, nothing that you do is right. Everything that you do is disrespected. Nothing that you say happens to you actually happens. If it did, it's because you did something to bring it upon yourself. You know, and that is why you don't end up, you know, pressing charges or suing people or seeking help from the police in a lot of situations, because you go through it on your own. You know, you go through these situations and you handle everything on your own, you know? So that's where I was, and that's why I responded the way I did to that situation, and not by telling people. Now, I eventually did tell people at that job that this guy did this, that, and the third, but they were like, one bitch in particular, Jamie, and I'm going to talk about her in a minute, shamed me, basically, and basically saying, you should have said something way before. You had all this opportunity to say something, you didn't say anything, so basically just being a bitch, washing their hands with the situation. And this Jamie character is actually trying to remember her name. Jamie Boston. It's not always great to have a memorable name. I worked with her in my first job ever, working at a rehabilitation detoxification facility. She was one of the assistants at the location, and she was like the highest up assistant or whatever. And I was the only other assistant, really. I remember her vividly because she ended up, you know, losing her pregnancy, unfortunately. And I remember just noticing all the while that she was pregnant, and she was really pregnant. Like, she was a short blonde woman with, like, you know, not a petite frame, but like she wasn't big. She wasn't fat, really. Her belly was out to here. And the only reason that she was even close to my height, and I'm 5'7" and a half, but she naturally looked like she was like 5 foot, maybe 5'2" or 5'3". But the only reason she was closer to my 5'7" and a half height is because she would wear 6-inch heels every day. And I always was just like, you know, I'm 17 years old at the time, and I was always very questionable or inquisitive about that. Like, I would always question that in my head, because I would just be like, wow, like, girl, you, because she was one of those women who walked in heels, like trudged in heels very, you know, harshly, very, you know, she would like stomp very hard when she walked in her heels. So it was just always very concerning to me, because I was just like, I see this pregnant woman as she's just trudging around in heels. Is that okay? Like, I don't think that's a good idea. You know what I'm saying? What about the baby? And lo and behold, she did end up having a miscarriage. Now, we could say it had everything to do with everything, other things that had nothing to do with her walking around in those heels. But I find that to be very far-fetched of an idea to absorb, knowing how hard she walked in those heels. Like, how forcefully. It was really bad. Like, she's one of those people who walks so fucking hard in heels that everyone knows that she's walking somewhere. They know who's walking as soon as they hear the noise of the footsteps, like, all that good stuff. But it was even worse than most people I've heard walk in heels. And I think that's because she had so much extra weight to deal with the pregnancy. But it's just like, girl, it is not worth it to be cute for 9 months. It's not worth it, girl. So she ended up unfortunately losing the pregnancy. And it was like, I don't know how many weeks she was in, but she looked like she was about to pop every day. So she was pretty deep into the pregnancy. It's pretty bad. But she ends up being the person working, one of the higher up people working at this company where this guy was sexually harassing me. So she was the one who responded to the whole situation. I actually never told the guy who recommended me for the position, my old foster dad, about that situation. And I really should have told him about that. I might have told him and just don't remember. And he just passed it off like it didn't matter. But yeah, that was really fucked up. For her to give me that response was really fucked up. But you know, I mean, does karma act retroactively? But anyway, I just wanted to mention that situation because, you know, it is another situation that did occur that is of me, you know, being in a, you know, similar sexual assault situation, sexual harassment, sexual assault. I remember the other situation. So there was one more situation when I was with this guy who I met online, and he ended up being this like much older guy, white guy, and you know, we went back to his house to spend the night and stay there and, you know, do the thing. And he ended up continuing despite the fact that I was, you know, clearly in pain and asking him to stop and pushing him off of me and screaming, like literally in pain. Like, it was ridiculous. Like, I know his neighbors were like, who the fuck is being raped down there? Like, you know, but nobody did anything. Nobody said anything or whatever. And I know they could have hurt me in that moment. And, you know, when I went to the restroom afterward, obviously it was similar to another situation that I described in this episode. But yeah, sorry if you guys aren't ready for this kind of content, but get ready because this type of stuff happens to almost everyone. And most people just don't talk about it. And I think that needs to change. But again, I'm Lynn Ferguson, also known as Lynn Tennyson, your host here on the show. And I welcome you next time we jump in Lynn's Bins.